Okay, thank you, Denny. So I'm talking here about different modes of preferential flow that can occur in macropores. And the ultimate objective of this is for new developing improved models of preferential flow, which I don't have a new predictive model to present today, but what I do have, I hope will be the basis for discussion and maybe some probing analysis of what might be good pathways forward. Our traditional concepts of unsaturated flow, of course, are based on the idea that a pore is either empty or it's filled, and it's the empty filled state is controlled by capillarity. You have surface tension contact angles that determine what matrix potentials pores empty and filled, determines the retention curve. And then for the conductivity, we assume it's the effect of the collective conductance of the pores that are filled at any given time. So I'm talking mainly about partially filled macropores, and so the first question is, how common is that? And I've seen a lot of evidence that suggests that it is very common. I won't go into that in detail, but one illustration here is the phenomenon of a non-uniform aperture macropore, which when you think about it, is that's the standard kind of macropore. They're not going to be, in general, uniform in natural media. So it's if it's ponded conditions, this could be filled near the surface. If it has a constriction here, below the constriction, the flow rate is limited. There's not necessarily enough flux to keep the macropore filled, so you have partially filled flow. And that filled, water can then flow in various different modes of, well, they're just different possibilities, shapes, sizes, processes, and so on. You can have rivulets, you can have corner flow, fingers, drops, blobs, films, and others. That these different flow modes have been studied by many scientists over the years, largely with laboratory experiments and theoretical investigations based on hydraulic relationships. Most of these studies have focus on either one flow mode, say corner flow or drop flow, or a small selection of flow modes, and the formulas that result relate force, flux, geometry, and so on for that one mode or small number of modes. But in actuality, many of these flow modes can operate simultaneously, and I believe that's what we should expect is the normal situation. And so what we need is a practical formulation, practical model, not too many thousands of terms or parameters, that represents the combined effects on forces, flux, water content, travel time relations. So to proceed, I suggest this. First of all, define the scope. Here, this is basically a matter of limitation to certain cases, so that the idea is work with something manageable and then expand it later. So non-turbulent flow without mode transitions, steady state, I consider relative forces from 0 to 1G, so gravity driven, sometimes with tilted pores. The next thing is categorize, and this is a quite critical step. Want to deal with a small number of categories rather than a large number of individual modes, so we want to group them together according to similar processes. Ideally have as few categories as possible, but aim to have the set of categories be as fully inclusive of as possible of all different possible flow modes. And then for those few categories, next step, develop formulas for say, force-flux relations, and finally combine the collective effect into the practical model. In this talk, I'll present things up partway through step three, so categorization and some of the formulas. So the categorization I propose in two levels. First level is the temporal continuity. And here it's just a matter of continuous versus intermittent flow. Continuous being things like rivulets and corner flow. Intermittent being slugs, blobs, drops, and so forth. And for each of these divide up again according to the second level, where I propose for isolating or for grouping similar physical processes, the important thing is the nature of the air-water interfaces in these partially or fully filled macropores. So, and I've got four categories there. First of all, air-water interface absent if you have a filled pore. Secondly, two types of interfaces that are controlled by surface tension and contact angles. These can be by pore geometry. They might necessarily be fixed in place. Some types of pores, they might be movable, so translatable without necessarily affecting, matrix potential. And finally, free surfaces, so a surface that's not constrained by by capillary forces and can within a certain range expand or shrink back. So examples of these. Also note that I used two letter abbreviations for these different modes. The absent AB, tension fixed, tension movable, free surface, and four examples that would fall in those categories. First of all, for absent, filled conduit flow that is relatively simple and we're familiar with. The surface tension fixed would be one good example is corner flow, where you have a capillary interface. It has to meet contact angles where it touches the solid surface, so the matrix potential is a controlling factor. And it's fixed because of the geometry here. Depending on the corner, it's got to assume the position that allows it to fit the contact angle. And then there's surface tension movable. That's something like this bridging rivulet, which could occur in parallel plane pores. And here, it's got interfaces much like the corner flow. But the difference is that these are movable. They can translate to make it wider or narrower in response to changes in the force or the input flux. And finally, free surface film likewise is free to expand or contract in response to force or flux changes. However, here there's the thickness of the film is strongly related to the effective conductance of the film. So you make it thicker, it's more conductive, as opposed to the surface tension fixed. Its conductance change. Well, it does change, but less. Oh, and we could make analogs for the intermittent cases, but that's beyond the scope of what I'm presenting here. So, some basic formulas for these four particular flow modes. If we look at force-flux relations, so these are analogs to Darcy's law, flux density being proportional to the relative driving force, and we've got a factor here that's analogous to hydraulic conductivity. In each case, there's a constant factor depending on viscosity and geometric configuration. There's one or more geometric variables that are important. And in every case I've looked at, in a nonlinear way. So for the filled conduit of this type of filled conduit, the slot bore as opposed to tube or something fully enclosed, it's the pore aperture width that's important for corner flow, the radius of curvature, bridging rivulet, two things, the aperture and also the width of the rivulet. Finally, the free surface film depends on the thickness. A couple of these, you see the effect of the cubic law, filled conduit and film. For these cases, I've assumed it's laminar flow theory, so we get the cubic law. There can be combinations and hybrids. Let me just point out one of those here, the one that's likely very important, the single face rivulet. So this is this has at the edges, it's got a movable surface tension controlled interface, and assuming it's broad enough, in the middle it has in effect a free surface. So this is, and these are, they've got to be tied together, interact, so you have elements of both of these flow mode categories. Okay, looking a little deeper at the quantitative relations, here, again, the same four examples. I've spelled out the driving forces in the flux relation. So in all of these, gravity is important. Two of them, the absent interface and surface tension fixed, you've also got pressure gradients or matrix potential gradients that are important. Matrix pressure itself is controlling in some cases, like the surface tension fixed, independent in others, like the free surface. The water content is quite important, naturally fixed for filled conduit, function of matrix potential for the corner flow, and for the surface tension movable, here it's a function of the flow rate. Increase the flow rate, you'll increase the width and therefore the water content. Similarly for the free surface film. And then another, besides flux, we're interested in tracer velocities or travel times. And here normally we just, take the flux density, divide by water content. That works for two of these cases. The other two, it doesn't, and that's quite important. The reason is that these are the cases where the water content is a function of the input flux. So you've got these two, the flux water content, both expressed in terms of flux. Divide them, you get some exponent other than one in a power law. And so this makes for a less than proportional relationship to flux and causes other additional complications we have to pay attention to. Mathematical treatments, existing ones, Darcy's Law, Richards equation, likely works for a couple of these categories, but these are possibly not really the most important ones in preferential flow. Kinematic waves, because there's a power law dependence and there's a lot of power law appearing in the formulas I showed, makes some sense. Source responsive model is more drastic, a more extreme case, which is potentially useful if you're just combining two models. Combining that with Darcy's Law Richards gives you two extremes, so you can cover the extremes and maybe by combination things in between. So to conclude, the partial filling introduces additional processes, can be categorized by two levels. Air-water interfaces are a very important criterion, four types, based on the degree to which the air-water interface is constrained. So where it's more constrained, your behavior is more like Darcy Richards' behavior. Less constrained, you get the important variables much more tangled. In particular, you have I'd single out the most important one as being that instead of water content being controlled by matrix potential, water content is controlled by the flux. So big difference. Quantifying total flux for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Time for two quick questions. Yes.
Are you talking about the geometry of connectedness of what?
Well, I mean, I find that the geometry of how much macropore flush the soil affects.
Ah, how much surface area in.
Where do we err? Do we err in how
the water
moves through the macropores or where the macropores are?
Boy, we err in both in general. I think. Largely, I focus mainly on the error due to the wrong flow mode, the wrong governing equation, under the assumption that the geometric configuration of macropores, the ratio to the amount of soil, and the connectedness, that's to be done as the second step. So I think, okay, they're both critically important. If you don't have connectedness, you won't have macropore flow.
Do you think the magnitude of the error getting either one of those steps wrong is about the same?
I'd say I don't see a reason to think one or the other would be bigger.
He's also a lawyer. Okay, we have to stop here. I'm sorry. Yeah.